Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the No Sports Podcast. I'm Jack Williams here with Essen Kassam, and today we're just going to be doing what we normally do, just talking about everything going on in the FSU athletics world, from football, softball, baseball, men's and women's basketball, getting towards the end of their regular seasons. You know, the combines this week as well for football and the NFL. You know, there's a lot going on here in the Florida State world, but yeah, we'll just kick this off and jump right into it. It's a big day right now, it being the leap day, February 29th, and the combine is starting today. You know, we're really going to get into action seeing, you know, a lot more results coming in around 3 p.m. It's currently 2:30. By the time this gets up, the combine will be, that part of the combine will well be over. But, you know, we're just getting ready and getting hyped up for everything right now. Essen probably can go through a little bit more of what's going on right now at the combine. But, yeah, Essen, handful of Florida State guys that are up in Indianapolis right now.
Yeah, a dozen players up there, you know, the third most behind the defending champion Michigan and runner up in Washington. I think Michigan had 16 players. Washington had 13. So Florida State with 12 today. Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, Fabian Lovett, defensive lineman, Tatum Bethoon, and Kalen Dilich, linebackers, are up there doing. We got measurements earlier today for a lot of them. And we're getting some, they're going to do field events today. Field events, it's not track, but on-field workouts is the right word. They're not doing, you know, a triple jump and all that.
Yeah, not track events.
Although there is a vertical jump and a broad jump, three-cone drill. So maybe it is just like doing track, I guess. Like, you know, some of these guys probably used to doing track.
That's true.
But it's not a track meet, don't worry. They're not, 40-yard dash, bench press, I don't know. Maybe it is a track meet.
They're doing similar, like, track events with, you know, the jumping and the running and stuff like that. But no, they aren't. It's not, you know, not to a T a track meet. But no, yeah, I get what you're saying. It's very similar kind of
I can't wait to see Braden Fisk's javelin throw and, you know, Jared versus discus.
Oh, my God. I mean, like you said, though, a lot of these guys, I mean, it is popular for football players to be track stars nowadays and stuff like that. And I know a few guys, these guys have actually done track in high school, been pretty successful at it. So, I mean, you know, it's a correlated their game in football on the field. It could help them there. Here, absolutely.
Jordan Travis is probably a good discus throw, right?
I would hope so.
That's a different kind of ball.
I would say he'd need to throw something really well if he wants to be a quarterback and stuff like that.
True. But Renardo Green, Jarvin Jones, and Yaheem Bell will have their measurements in the morning tomorrow. On field workouts at 3 p.m. Jordan Travis, Dre Benson, Keon Coleman, and Johnny Wilson will go Saturday with on field workouts and all that on measurements on Saturday. Some they do bench press stuff, so it's going to be a loaded day for the next couple of days for these players. Be important week for some of these players because it's going to determine where they go, you know, how far they go up and what they can do with their draft stock. Because I think we talked about it, Jared Verse and Keon Coleman seem like in most mock drafts are first-round picks. Mm-hmm. Keon Coleman goes in the second round in a couple mocks we've seen. So their locks are early on. Obviously, day one of the draft is on Thursday, I believe. Day two would be second and third rounds and so on. So I think Florida State probably has three players I'd say right now that probably good chance of going in the first 2 days in.
Mm-hmm.
And so Verse, Coleman, and Fisk. Obviously, a good combine could get Johnny Wilson into the conversation. Uh-huh. Trey Benson could go round three.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Travis probably a fifth, sixth round pick. Johnny Bell's probably a fifth, sixth round pick. Jarvin Jones, someone that, you know, he's a slot corner, but he could probably surprise people and go a little higher. Renardo Green, I think, is a little underrated. Could be interesting. The linebackers were good college players. I'm not sure how good of college players they'll be, but who knows? They could prove us wrong, have good combine, and, you know, work themselves higher into the draft kind. But it's going to be interesting to see. Jared Verse last year was like a first-round pick. Top half, Kit decided to come back. Could be a top half pick again this year. Just everything comes down to like how his measurements came out decent, not great.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what he looks like in the field. I mean, we know what he looks like in the field, but how he tests. And then yeah. Jared Verse, as we know, two of it, we love fucking Jared Verse whenever we got him at media. Great talker.
Very wonderful guy.
You know, he's very smart, very cerebral. He knows how to win an interview. So it's going to be interesting when teams get to talk to him. He's going to be someone's probably going to build a stock that way. Same with Brain Fisk. Fabian Lovett, you know, is a little more quiet, so I'm kind of interested to see how he talks, how he tests. It's going to be interesting. Jordan Travis, obviously, is going to do well in all this because he's Jordan Travis.
Right.
So it's going to be fun to see the next couple of days, see how they do for their draft stock. Obviously, it's not the end-all, be-all, because we've seen people do poorly at the combine and do well in the NFL. We've seen players like, you know, John Ross, a former Washington wide receiver, broke the record for the 40-yard dash and never did anything in the NFL because of, like, you know, injuries and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see. I think we can talk about Mel Kiper, you know, draft. Anything else before we go talk about Mel Kiper's draft, about the combine, Jack?
The what?
Anything else? Think of anything else for the combine?
No, it's just, it's going to be, I'm excited to see what these results are going to look like. Yeah, I mean, like you said too, this is a big week for them just to show and perform and what they are capable of. Obviously, we've seen what they've done at the college stage, and you know, this is one of the bigger tests, and just seeing where they're going to clock in and time and distance and all that comes in and stuff like that. And it's going to be interesting to see where everybody ranks up and stuff like that. As you mentioned, there could be some surprises in here too, and just see some guys that are performing well. I mean, Braden Fisk is someone who, you know, really turned a lot of heads at the Senior Bowl. Maybe he can, you know, continue doing that here at the Combine as well. You know, he's still pretty highly ranked when it comes to these next gen stats that kind of rank where each guy is according to this model that the NFL has right now, and he's currently up there right now. So I think I'm kind of interested to see what he's going to do. Obviously, Keon Coleman, Jared Verse will be exciting as well, and just all these other guys. It'll be interesting to see what Jordan Travis is going to be like back in action as well, because we haven't seen him really do anything too physical since November.
If he does much anyways, I don't know. We haven't heard what he's going to do. I don't know what he's capable of doing right now, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he'll be involved. But, it should be a fun next few days for sure.
So pulling up a couple mock drafts, I have ESPN.com from Mel Kiper. He has Jared Verse, number 11 overall to the Minnesota Vikings. Athletic also has. Sorry, they changed it. I thought, so they have 16. The Athletic has Jared Verse 16 to the Seahawks. So I think that's, they have one more. Yep, Keon Coleman, the Athletic, 24 to the Dallas Cowboys. That'd be kind of interesting. And Keon Coleman to the Buccaneers, according to Southern Mock Draft. So two Florida State players in the first round. Mel Kiper personally, in his thing, says, I don't have a top 15 grade on Jared Verse. So obviously that could change depending what happens this week. A lot of cheering outside the office.
For something, yeah. I don't know what's going on over there.
There's a lot going on, but it should be interesting to see what happens. Obviously, mock drafts mean very little at this point.
Right.
After the combine, they mean a little bit more. We'll probably have a roundup next week just to be like post-combine mock draft for you guys to look at. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Yeah, I mean, Jack, you were mentioning something earlier that was interesting. All the Florida State players are above or average or above average when it comes to the draft ranking. Do you have that pulled up right now?
I mean, Jared Verse comes in leads everyone at 82. Jaheim Bell, there was very few guys that are considered elite overall. Yeah, there's three. Jaden Daniels, Brock Bowers, and Caleb Williams, which is... like, that makes sense. let me pull up Florida State again. But yeah, Jared Verse is at 82, Jaheim Bell at 78, along with Trey Benson. This is Braden Fisk, 75, Ken Coleman, 75, Jordan Travis, 74, Kalen DeLoach, really pushing that. Everyone I just mentioned is in a good ranking, so that's 70 and above. And then 70, and I think it's 60 to 70 is average, and then 60 and below is below average, which is kind of sad that there's that category, and it's a little blunt in my opinion, but it is what it is. But Kalen DeLoach, 69, Johnny Wilson, 68, Renardo Green, 66, Tatum Bethune, 65, Jarian Jones, 63, and Fabian Lovett, 61. So, but a lot of all these guys are either average or good. I mean, that kind of says something about the program.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think there's probably a couple notable players that are not at the combine, which is kind of interesting. Akeem Dent being one. Does he have a profile on there?
Akeem Dent.
Kind of interesting because he is not in the
well, this is like the combine thing. He's not on here.
Kind of surprised me he's not there, because I think of all the safeties I would tag, or of the defensive backs, I would have him as the best, but you never know. I know less than these people, obviously. But yeah, no, so it'd be interesting. I think, well, I guess NFL Draft Buzz has him as a UDFA, which is an undrafted free agent. I guess his height works against him, his hands, arms, but all of that. But let's see, Renardo Green, someone they posted about, they have him as a pretty high grade as a safety, 83.4, and this is NFLDraftBuzz.com. But yeah, no, I mean, should be interesting to see how this next couple of days play out.
Absolutely.
I'm obviously interested to see how Keon Coleman tests out. I think he's probably like a third or fourth best receiver in this class now that we've kind of let the – probably fourth or fifth. Because I think there's no question Marvin Harrison's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Romeo Dusé from Washington's number two. He's really good. Malik Nabers probably could push him for that number two spot. So it's a deep wide receiver class. Keon Coleman is, as you saw at Florida State, very talented, very dynamic player, but we'll see how he could run routes and win routes in the NFL compared to – it's different, you know, obviously.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like watching, you know, a high school player come from high school. You learn a new level. It's
yeah.
the same thing, you know, so it's going to be a shock for a lot of players, but
– it's a whole different – like, yeah, it's a whole different game. Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. But, yeah, so that's – for future, or I guess ex-Noles, you know, I get, or once in a while, always in a while, I don't know. But those are for former players. Next, we get a small glimpse of current players, Jack. Are you, I mean, a tour of duty next Thursday.
Yeah.
We get to see a small glimpse of the workouts. It's going to be interesting to see, because obviously we have not been out there. So if I remember correctly from last year, we get in the morning, watch them do workouts. You know, we'll be able to take some videos of different things that they do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a very long session we get, but we kind of get to talk to Coach Dorms after, which is always interesting. He talks about the players he's seen growth for. Narvalis talks about it because I think it's their last tour of duty before they open spring practice. So they get like a little time off. Spring break is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see what we get next week. What do you think, Jack? What are you looking forward to next year?
For tour of duty?
Tour of duty, I said next year.
Yeah, I was like, I'm honestly, I'm kind of just like everybody, I'm kind of just looking forward to seeing all these new guys. Obviously, and the big thing is, I think for everyone, the big thing is just seeing DJU and seeing how he's going to fit in with everything and stuff like that. That's what I'm kind of excited about. Seeing him incorporated into everything and how he's going to mess with this offense as well. By this time, both of them are going to be out, but I wrote some stories just about players to watch during the spring, which I should pull up the defensive one right now and the offensive one. So I'll talk about the defensive one a little bit. I mean, the big guy, Essen said this is one of the players that he's really excited to mention. And again, I apologize if I butcher this. Sion Lolehe.
I think Sion Lolehe.
Sion Lolehe. Yeah. I mean, if you look at his stat lines that he's put up, you know, an all Pac-12 second team defense, I mean, this is a guy that's going to fill up a big gap on the defensive line, and I'm really excited about to see and just how he's going to perform as well. Someone who's really well built, too. Patrick Payton is another guy at the defensive end as well. Just I'm excited just to see his production in general. Just the year he had last year, you know, took a little second for him to get going, but he's really just brought a ton of energy, a ton of passion. He's just always a fun practice player to watch. The defensive back in the secondary, that's just going to be a fun position, period, to watch with Azaria Thomas. Who else did I have? Shaheem Brown. You know, Shaheem Brown had a really big year with those 53 tackles. Just seeing these guys grow on the defensive end is going to be huge. DJ Lundy, you know, there's all the controversy of him leaving and then coming back after FSU had that loss to Georgia. It's going to be interesting to see how he's going to lead a little bit more bear of a linebacker room. Josh Farmer alongside Daryl Jackson, those two are good friends, and just seeing their impact on the defensive line. Yeah, those were kind of the ones I hit on a little bit just on the defensive side of the ball. But yeah, I mean, those I guess I could leave it open for, like, you should read the offensive stories well to see what I had to say there. But those are the guys I'm excited to see on defense. It's gonna
offense,
be
you could just probably name them, let them see.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously DJU, Brock Glenn at quarterback as well, just because he was, I don't think Brock ever predicted that he was going to be in this position that he's in right now, going into his second year, being kind of shoved into games, you know, getting to the Orange Bowl, ACC, a rivalry game.
After an injury, dealing with injury all year as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where he comes in and where he's coming in as a a sound backup now, and then see how that growth is going to progress from there. I have a few transfers right now. I'm trying to think the guys that are currently on the roster. Kentron Poyater, just I was a little harder on him on my story, just talking about that this needs to be a big year for him. We've seen, we obviously referenced that spring showcase over and over again, but he was out for injury for a bit in the season early on, but then when he came back, it just really didn't jump out as much as I think people were going to expect. He had a pretty few good games and stuff like that. He almost had his first touchdown of the season against Wake Forest, got called back to a holding call. But this needs to be a big year for him as well. There are two transfers that I put on that I cannot think of right now. Maybe you might be able to help me here.
Malik Benson, wide receiver, and running back Roydell Williams.
Yes, those two.
Alabama transfers.
Roydell Williams was the top JUCO prospect 2 years ago or a year ago. He came off. His stats weren't crazy with Alabama, but just talking about what he did in JUCO and
there's a deeper room in Alabama as well. So
yeah, and I mean, this is a player too that could be molded into something great coming up as well. There are two starting positions left open right now. With Johnny Wilson leaving, Keon Coleman leaving, so he's one that a lot of people might be predicting that he gets into that outside position there. It's going to be really exciting to see how he messages in the offense. I don't think he's going to be as dynamic and flash as Keon Coleman was when he walked in here, but this is a player that could be really exciting early on. And then is it Roydell Williams was the other
Roydell
one?
Williams.
Yeah, running back too. This is a position that's open as well with Trey Benson leaving. This is a guy that had around 500 yards last season with Alabama. Not crazy stats compared to Trey Benson's 900, but this is a guy that's been building throughout his entire career, and this could be the year that he kind of really kicks the door down. Obviously, there's some he's a good player that could be starting as well alongside Lawrence Toefele. I had one more. It was Kyle Morlock was on there as well. The tight end room was really deep last year with him and Jaheim Bell and Barkeeston Douglas. Even Preston Daniel was helpful at times as well. Bell left, Douglas transferred. Daniel transferred twice, actually. He was at Buffalo and then went to Miami of Ohio. So Morlock is kind of the one guy there, kind of the veteran guy there right now, considering he came and made the switch from D2 to D1 last year. And, had an impressive year as well. It's going to be interesting to see how he steps up too. Those are the guys I'm excited about. I think I'm also just going to be excited to be watching football again a bit too, kind of getting back into the swing of things. As chaotic as it does get, and it can get a little old from times after day of practice, it's still fun to be out there, and it's an energetic environment, stuff like that, so it's exciting just to have things ramped up again too.
No, we get tour of duty on Thursday, March 7th, Monday, March 18th, pre-spring media luncheon when we get to sit with the coaches and talk to them. Tuesday, March 19th is spring practice number one, and then March 22nd is the FSU Pro Day.
Yeah, that's gonna be wild this year.
So it's last year we it was a bunch of people there, but everyone was there to watch one person and Jamie Robinson.
It's gonna be a little bit more
crowded.
It's gonna be a little bit more crowded, a little more.
The 12 players at the combine and a few other players that could sprinkle in. Jack, you're gonna hate this.
Why am I gonna hate it? What are you gonna say?
Last year Tour of Duty started at 6 AM.
Are you kidding?
Nope.
I
just found the email.
I can't swear on here. What? 6 a.m.?
Yep, it was 6 a.m. last year, so.
If y'all don't know me, which I think most of you do, but, like, I hate waking up early, and, like, I have to, and I am going to force myself to go, but, because I need to go, but, like, oh, God. So how long does it go for? How long does it usually go for?
Oh, let's see. I don't remember last year, the timing, but I just remember it was early. I didn't remember it was that early, but it's gonna be fun.
That's early, dude.
I had a story up by 9:30, if that helps at all.
Oh, my gosh.
So next week, actually, you guys are going to get us to – we're going to
– I'm just going to do an all-nighter, which is probably an even worse idea.
So you guys will get a taste of that on the podcast next week, because we're going to go straight from the Tour of Duty – come back to the office and record from here.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what mood we're both in after that. Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I know last year we got – just looking back at the – I pulled up the stories from last year. I think we did a five takeaways five things learned from Toro's Giro in the media, which was interesting. You know, last year we learned about high expectations for 2023. Surprise. Winston, right, was rounding back in the form. Coming back injuries, running backs was one of my takeaways.
This is actually very interesting to hear.
Newcomers driving. Like, it's funny, like, looking at it 1 year ago, like, and still waiting on a waiver for Dimitri Emmanuel and Daryl Jackson. We know how that played out.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, so it should be interesting. Florida State starts – last year they started practices. They had – I want to see the schedule right here. How many practices it before? They had a practice on March 6th, 10th. March 6th, 8th, and 10th. Three practices before they went to spring break and had a week off. Then had practices, three practices the week after March 23rd, 23rd, 21st, 23rd. A scrimmage close to the media with availability after in Zoom on the 25th Saturday. So they're not doing that this year. They're going to have spring practices start after spring break, which is probably better. The I remember the practice after spring break. The first practice after spring break, it was not great energy.
No, it's there's been a few practices here and there, and you can kind of tell when it's not on. But spring break, like as I mentioned, they're college kids. You don't know what they're doing in that time off, and then instantly being thrown into a grind of practice. It takes a second to get adjusted to.
Yeah, no. And then the other thing I did was a story on. Just talking to, we got Norvella, which we do after, you know, spring practices, but then we got to talk to Coach Storms as well. So it'll be interesting to see. We could probably get both of them again, so it'd be good to talk to them again, see what they, how they feel the team is, you know, what's going on, and all that. So be interesting, you know. Football, it's almost back.
Yeah, it's right around the corner. We're starting to. I'm starting to feel the bags coming over my eyes once again, starting to twitching over the stress. Hopefully it won't be as chaotic of a year, but we will see. It's still extremely early on, but yeah, we are getting hints of what's to come. We're still dealing with last year, considering the draft and stuff like that.
No, it's not over yet. I mean, the NFL draft is probably like about a month after that, so there's in April, end of April, so it's... Football's never really over.
I know Daniel's gonna help. Well, yeah, I'm gonna help with this when it comes around, but I'm just trying to get ahead of the curve, and I think I'll just do it just to have fun. But
number 11 overall to the Vikings.
I'm leaving it as a, who knows what will happen. I might have to change the color scheme and well, stuff like that, but I'm just trying to place the pictures right now.
I think you're the one who did it for Jamie Robinson last year when he got drafted.
I did. I still have the template, so I'm filling these, I'm just diddling with these right now.
You guys can't see this, but Jack's working on a Canva, but you know, just graphics, what we will end up doing for when players are drafted.
And we have a crap ton of time too. But it's always good to be prepared.
Yeah, no, and we know Jared Verse is likely going in the first round unless, you know, something crazy happens. But
which yeah, it's not out of question on this beat, but...
Yeah, exactly. We've dealt with a lot, so we don't rule anything out.
Yeah. Oh, good Lord.
But yeah, no, anything else about football today, Jack?
Yeah. Yeah, we're switching over to the Diamond, talk about the baseball team. Gosh, they still haven't lost yet, which is just crazy to say. First time
what last year was, yeah.
Considering what happened last year and everything that happened, this is the first time since 2019 that they've started off the season now sitting at 7-0. They went 12-0 that year before a wide loss to Florida further down the way. But I mean they've been playing well right now. The pitching's been looking great. The bats have been looking even better, in my opinion, right now. Obviously, there's some the early season things here that need to be tweaked up here and there. Also, you can put out there the level of competition as well. In talking about Western Carolina and Butler and who'd they just play that I was at that game and why can't I remember?
USF.
They just played USF, which is not, they're not awful. They'll be tested a little bit more this weekend playing Illinois and, Western Michigan's being decent as well, too. The MAC is not, it's not an awful baseball conference. I'm trying to think of who else was on there as well. I can't think of it right now off the top of my head. They are going to Greenville for the tournament, and they are also going to be playing Michigan State. Illinois and Michigan State are actually two sub-500 teams, and so actually it might open up for them to continue. They come back home to play FGCU, and then they have a weekend series after that against New Orleans before jumping into a really jam-packed schedule. But right now, this first pitch invitational is the focus, and I mean, a win's win, record's record, they're 7-0. I mean, Essen, what's been the most impressive thing to you in this run early on?
Just like you mentioned, you know, we knew hitting was going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing this team was, but just how well they hit. James Tibbs, you know, very advanced hitter, as Link called him after the game the other day. Just fun to watch, you know, when he's on, he's on. Cam Smith has shown, like, the crazy thing is he's been hitting well. He hit his first home run of the season on Tuesday. What day was that? Tuesday, right? Tuesday against South Florida. That was his first home run of the season. So, just a team that has power up and down the lineup. They have good bat control. They have speed when they need it.
Mm.
That opening weekend, we saw them steal a bunch of bases, and then since then, they've kind of, like, you know, slowed down on that. But they have the speed if they need it. They have the power if they need it. They have a little bit of everything in the offensive lineup. Pitching is still going to be a question mark because they haven't really faced a ton of teams yet, great teams yet. I do think, you know, you have something special in Cam Leiter. And Jamie Arnold in the, you know, 1-2 roles. But beyond that, Connor Whitaker has looked good so far, and I think you know what you have in him. He's a solid pitcher. He's not going to wow a lot of people on a lot of occasions, but he's a very solid pitcher. That's going to get you a solid 5-6 innings, rack up strikeouts, get outs, and just be, you know, pretty solid overall.
Hmm.
We talked to Link today on a Zoom to preview this weekend, and he talked about, you know, Yoel Tejada. Not Tejada. I can't remember.
I think you got it right.
It's not Tejada. It's Tejada. Like, the J is not pronounced at all. Tejada.
Okay.
Tejada, that's what it was. You know, walked three guys. 12 balls, 0 strikes in his outing against Butler. No, that was not Butler. Where they play last weekend?
Last week in Western Carolina.
Western Carolina. Mm. 12 balls, 0 strikes. He didn't get any outs. The starting pitcher for Western Carolina went out there and he's like, I'm not going to get any outs either. You know, so Link said that he wants to get him out there again, but maybe not in a start. He said ideally he wants to get him in there, like, you know, 10-0 game or whatever, mm-hmm. and just get him. Get his feet wet, let him pitch a little bit, get it, you know, make him feel comfortable. So we'll see. I think he said today, Friday, Saturday, you have your pitchers. You know, Cam will pitch, Cam Leiter will pitch Friday, Jamie Arnold Saturday. Then there's forecast of rain Sunday. There's forecast of rain Friday, Saturday, I think, as well. Like, not as high chances. But Sunday will be we'll see what happens when we get there kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
You know. Because we saw Connor Whitaker is not going to be able this weekend. He's going to be starting Tuesday or Wednesday because they have another weekday series against a pretty good Florida Gulf Coast team. So Connor Whitaker is going to be on the – it sounds like he's going to be in the weekdays for moving forward a little bit because Florida State schedule, if you pull that up, they have some tough weekday games coming up. The weekend slate does not tighten up and get very difficult for a little bit. The weekday schedule's a little tougher right now.
Yeah, FGCU, I don't think there's any throwaway game.
Then it's a two-game series, so you got to be more careful. You get Florida. Stetson's usually good. Then you finally get the Clemson and Florida again, Louisville. So, yeah, no, the one of three matchups at Florida. So I don't think you really want to move Connor Whitaker away from the – you probably want to pitch against Florida because you want that win.
Yeah.
So – it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, but I think Whitaker's going to be in the weekday rotation for now. Eventually, I think you ideally would like to get in the weekend rotation unless someone steps up and is like, no, this is, you know, they're good enough to take that spot. I think the other person we probably won't see this weekend or maybe limited will be Ben Barrett. He closed out the game Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's available for a couple innings on Sunday, but I don't think so. But you do have Andrew Armstrong, who made his season debut on Sunday, pitched one inning.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking to expand his role and get him going again. I think this weekend should be a good test. Link called it a mini regional.
A mini regional.
obviously, I don't think the teams are going to be the same level, but that's fine. He's mentioned, like, you know, we took this job. He made the schedule from scratch this year. And one of the things he wanted to do, because he couldn't find a weekend series this weekend, mm-hmm. was to go play in a tournament where he could have, like, a mini regional setup and play teams back-to-back in a different situation to see how the team reaction does.
Right.
So, it'd be interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, Jack, you covered the game Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
James Tibbs, man. I covered him Sunday. In his last two games, he has four home runs.
I mean, the guy's just been lights out. He's been, I mean, just his hitting abilities. I mean, he talked about after the game, too, just how he's really been able to grow into... You know, I'm just fooling around with this. It's driving me crazy. Yeah, I mean, just his hitting abilities are impressive. He talked about just how he's really grown into this role, and it's allowed him to really, I don't know if slow down the game is the correct word, but that's what he used. He's been able to expect things a little bit more and see what's coming a little bit more and stuff like that. It's really allowed him to settle in and, you know, figure out where to hit and stuff like that. And, he's just been electric early on. Link just talked about how his ability to learn the game and, you know, executing has been huge. Talking about when he's been in the dugout, Tibbs is right next to him the whole time. When he's not hitting or he's on the field, he's right next to Link the entire time. Just learning the game, you know, he's just been kind of a scholar of the game right now, just learning about what to do. And it's really, I mean, if you want to talk about just the test of what you've been learning, he's really shown out. And just, I think he's now up to 5 home runs early on. And he's been lights out for them right now. I mean, it's been interesting with some of these games too. I know the few games I've been to, I can't talk too much on the Western Carolina series because I wasn't there, but I know with Butler and South Florida, I don't know why I'm struggling so much with them, but you know, these games, granted they cracked open the South Florida game a little early, but the Butler game, it took a second for the offense to get going in both games before they blew things open. But you know, he's just been electric for them this year very early on, which is, you know, definitely a good thing to see.
No, I think one thing that Link mentioned after Sunday's game
mm-hmm.
was that, you know, last year he moved around first base, left field, right field, moved a little bit. I think he's been predominantly in right field this year, so it's been easier for him. I think having a home on defense probably helps a little bit, where he's not moving around. He doesn't have to worry about, like, oh, how am I going to do this over here? How am I going to do this over here? He just has to go out there and hit and play mm-hmm. right field. He had a couple of good catches in the Western Carolina series, so I think he settled in nicely. I think... kind of tie both of these together, but this past weekend was an amazing weekend for Tallahassee natives.
Yeah.
We'll jump into the softball side in a second, but, you know, Drew Ferreau had a monster game, hit his first career home run on Friday, went crazy on Saturday with a triple. Jackson West drove him in, former Childs player.
Yeah.
And it was just a good weekend for FSU baseball players from Tallahassee. So if I can pull the story quickly, but, you know, I want to pull up their stats to tell you exactly how good a weekend it was. Because Drew Ferreau was a monster, to say the least. Yeah, he went 3-for-4 with 4 RBIs on Sunday. And added another stolen base, 4th stolen base of the year. For the weekend, he was 8-of-11 with 4 doubles, 1 triple, 1 home run, 6 runs scored, and 7 RBI. Mm-hmm. So, monster weekend. He also, just for fun, added drew 2 walks and had 2 sacrifice flags, you know, just for fun.
He's all over the field, yeah.
Yeah, no, so great weekend. He's hit, coming, going into, I think he was 1-for-4 on Tuesday.
Sorry, I'm just trying to set it when it was bothering me. Anyway, no, I'm listening.
He went 1-for-4 on Tuesday, so I don't have his updated batting average, but he was hitting .538.
Yeah.
Through Sunday.
Oh, jeez. He really?
Yeah, so he probably is like an average player at best now at .500. You know, nothing special anymore.
Average, yeah. No.
But then Jackson West went 4-for-6 for the weekend with a double, a triple, 2 walks, and drove in 3 runs, including twice he drove in on Saturday. Last Saturday, he drove in Ferreau twice with a double and a triple.
Mm-hmm.
So, good weekend for locals.
Yeah. I mean, these are two guys definitely to be excited about. Ferreau, I know, in high school, you know, this was a guy that had, you know, was highly scouted upon as well. He was one of the top players in the area. So was West, but Ferreau was, you know, he was in line. He was up there, and you won one of the people that had the chance to become player of the year. And I mean, in high school, he's dynamic. UCF, he is in the history book there now as the freshman with the most home runs in his freshman season. You know, West was a great catcher as well. You know, continuing to contribute on the other side, you know, of the play as well when it comes to hitting and stuff like that. I mean, you know, these are two guys, two Tallahassee natives that are really getting the job done. There's a few more coming in this next class as well too. So I mean, recruiting locally. I mean, Link's a local guy. He probably emphasizes that a little bit more as well, and they're producing.
Yeah, I think he mentioned, because I asked him to be in the year before, like when the practices first started, I had asked him about that. I'm like, you know, he's like, it's important to recruit locally. That's where recruiting starts.
Oh, yeah.
And then you build out and get players, you know. So I think baseball, as Jack can attest to, is huge in the Tallahassee area.
Oh, yeah.
Baseball and softball both are huge in the Tallahassee area. It's very important to the community. But yeah, no. So we have that. And then on the other side, one local and one local-ish. You know, local player being Jasoni.
Yeah.
She had a monster weekend where FSU went 6-0 and outscored their opponents 50-11.
Absolutely dominant this weekend. Florida High alumna.
But she hit a solo home run into the parking lot, not parking lot, sorry, the road on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a week, guys. On Saturday, and she hit a second home run later on in the game. She has three career home runs now. She was hitting .512. They haven't played any games, so I can say that confidently. She's hitting .512 with three home runs, 14 RBIs, and 12 runs scored. You know, Lonnie's been proud of what she's coming in. She doesn't look like a freshman. She's been doing really well.
Oh, yeah. She's jetted out.
She's had a really good start to her career. You know, Lonnie's at some point there's going to be she's going to run into something because it's a freshman. Like, you know.
Right.
When people have video on you and they know how you hit the scouting report, they're going to pitch you differently. And so how she makes an adjustment is going to be interesting. But she hit a home run that set up a walk-off home run by a Sneeds girl, who's local-ish, I'd say. You know? In McKilla Edenfield.
Mm-hmm.
So, fun fact. I got there on Saturday for the first, because they played a doubleheader against Nichols.
That's what it
was, Nichols.
Double L.
They were down 4-3 in the bottom of the seventh inning when I got there.
Mm.
2 minutes after I got there, and I got video of it, you can see on their site, McKayla Edenfield got a base hit, two RBI single to win the game.
Mm.
In the second game, they were up 6-0 in the bottom of the fifth inning, and she had a 2-run shot. 8-0.
Yeah.
The walk-off. You know, walk off for all intents and purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked her, I requested her and Jasoni after, because I'm like, I want to talk to you two. You guys are interesting ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Michaela, I'm like, you know, have you ever hit 2 walk-offs in one day? She's like, I've never hit a walk-off in my life before. So, like, you know, it's funny how softball works like that sometimes. Like, you know, this girl had never hit a walk-off hit before in her career.
It's crazy to think that was such of a dominant player she is. Like, that's crazy to hear.
And then so she had 2 in 1 day, so it's really fun. Like, you know, how just the sport finds you sometimes. Like, you know,
oh, absolutely.
How some stuff happens. But she was, do I have her stats? Entering the weekend, she had 2 home runs and 5 RBIs, but she had struggled with 7 strikeouts and 22 at-bats.
Mm.
You know, she hit 4 home runs for the weekend or something like that. It was something crazy. Mm. Yeah, 4 home runs for the weekend. She's hitting .412 with 6 home runs, 14 RBIs, 11 runs scored. Over the weekend, she walked 7 times and I think struck out twice. Or, no, didn't strike out at all. So she has more walks now than strikeouts. It's crazy how one weekend can change the trajectory of your season.
Right.
No, or one weekend could change, you know, nothing happens.
I mean, she, I think we were talking about this too as well. You could tell she's really starting to find her bat now at infield.
I think we talked about it last Thursday in the podcast. I said, you know, I don't think she's really, this offensive program really well. I don't think she has, you know, really, I don't think her bat's taken off yet.
Uh-huh.
Lo and behold, that weekend she went off. So should I pick this weekend?
Who should you?
For this one game this weekend.
For the double jinx, yeah. I mean, you
know. Sure, Issa Torres is going to have a huge weekend, huge game.
I love to see that, absolutely. That's been big news as well, too, about the single game that they're playing this weekend. Not even at, well, quote-unquote, home. It's still in Tallahassee city limits.
Yeah. So they were scheduled for the Jinx Sanders Classic this weekend. And they had an interesting setup with, you know, Oregon, who's just outside the top 25, and Washington, I think, was number 4. And then two teams in Maryland and Mount St. Mary's are okay teams, but, you know, still competition.
Right.
They're going to play 4 games over 3 days, or 4 games in 2 days, sorry. They're going to play Friday, Saturday. They made the call on Tuesday that we're not making this trip anymore. For a good reason. Lots of snow expected in the area. Lots of just weather everywhere in the country we've seen right now. You know, Jack posted a photo. He's from Chicago. Of just the lightning that's, you know, and the tornado warnings that were in Chicago, which is, I guess, a rarity, right?
I don't know. It's been so weird with, like, you know, global warming and this type of stuff. But, like, yeah, usually February in the thick of it. I haven't seen tornadoes in Chicago since, like, in February since, I think, 2008. It's been a really long time. But, yeah, no, there was lightning, thunder. I'm guessing your girlfriend who's up in Chicago, I'm guessing she experienced the brunt of the bad weather up there as well. But, yeah, no, there was tornadoes up in that area, too. The weather was just not good around the country as well all weekend.
So, just like, you know, it went from 70 degrees that day to 30 degrees the next day in Chicago, which is just nuts. You know, it's a lot to deal with.
No, it's wild.
But, yeah, so there's a lot of weather going on. So, there's wildfires in Texas. So, it's like, you know, it's unfortunate right now. There's a lot going on. So, they just made the decision early. They agreed with Oregon that they're going to play each other next year. FSU's going to travel out there. So pulled out of that tournament, probably for the best. You know, you don't want to go over there when you have 4 games scheduled in 2 days and just end up playing 1 game and have to come back cross country.
Right.
So probably for the best if there's not a great chance of playing. So
don't want to risk anything, absolutely.
Yeah, so they no games this weekend except on Sunday. They play at noon. They host Jacksonville at Rattler Field.
Yeah, yeah, No, Joanne Graff this time. It's they're over on the not too far, but still not at home. It, very interesting that the game's gonna be over there. But you know,
free admission, it will not be streamed, and you fans are told to follow along at statbroadcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll be at that game just Sunday because it's just logistics and stuff, like being late and then 1 game only.
Yeah.
And I think it's supposed to rain Sunday, so who knows?
The weather's not going to be ideal, as we just were talking about.
What?
So the weather's not going to, doesn't look like it's going to be ideal. Just no. As we were talking about the weather, just all this week.
So just, you know, Longy had a great quote. I think sometimes it's outdoor sports. You kind of have to go with the flow, and Mother Nature always wins. Mother Nature does always win.
She does. She is undefeated.
So, yeah. So FSU softball will have a short week this week. They play 1 game this weekend, play Florida Gulf Coast next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And
then you get into, March is going to be, it's going to be, quote unquote calmer for them earlier this month. It's not March yet, but, it's going to be tomorrow. You know, then it really ramps up for them. You know, I think it's right after that Florida Gulf Coast weekend when they play in that tournament. That's when South Dakota State comes for a doubleheader.
Doubleheader Tuesday and Alabama Wednesday.
They have Alabama Wednesday.
Then conference play opens, I believe.
Yeah, you have Duke that weekend, and who's currently ranked higher than FSU. And then you have
Texas.
I think they're still – are they still number 2 in the country?
I think they're number 3 according to FSU's schedule, I think.
Yeah, and then you have Texas coming into it as well. If you're an FSU softball fan, this is going to be – an amazing end of the month. Like, you're gonna want, like, get to these games early if you want seats. Even if you want seats outside the stadium, get there early, because like Alabama and Texas coming into town in a week span, and then crunched in the middle of that, like the best team currently in the ACC, before to open up ACC play, and then like, you know, a fun doubleheader before all of that. Like, this is good. That's going to be a great end of the month here. But right now they're just kind of pushing through all the mess that is the weather, and you know, getting games under their belt. It's good that they were able to get Jacksonville to come to town and stuff like that. And you know, it's good that they're going to be able to get to Florida Gulf Coast. But I promise, you know, it's kind of slow right now, but I promise it will all pay off in the end when at the end of the month when all these crazy teams come to town. It's going to be a lot of fun at the end of the month. Right now it's a little stressful, but at the end of the month it's going to be well worth it.
Yeah. 11-3 team, off to a good start. And now moving on to another good team, have a huge game tonight in women's basketball, Louisville.
Yeah,
you know, huge game. That's gonna be huge. I think Florida State, we were talking earlier, according to ESPN Bracketology, was the 7th seed in the Austin region right now.
Yes,
they would play Middle Tennessee and play Texas after. Texas is a highly rated team. They would be number 2 in that conference. And that was the Stanford region, I believe, playing in Portland.
Yes, Stanford region.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. Florida State's got to It's a must-win game tonight.
If you want to continue, I wrote a really long, I kind of got into my mad scientist head about this story, and I kind of really put some, you know, really put, I don't know what I was putting together there, but really figure out what routes could look like for them. And if they want to have any sort of viable option of any sort of, and this is like the big reach. Just like if you want any sort of viable option of hosting, you need to win out completely. If you want to be, you know, still a team that's above at 8 or above, you need to start. You need to win this big game. FSU hasn't had a big win since the Virginia Tech game. In my opinion, this team would have been in a really good place if they just didn't have those two losses to Virginia and Duke. Just a bad loss to Virginia and just a really wide bad loss to Duke on the road. Outside of that, if you take those two losses out, the resume isn't that bad. Essen has talked about that really exciting game they played against Notre Dame on the Painted Pink night that went to double overtime, and FSU, you know, had their moments, just couldn't close out there. You can argue against NC State. That was when Tanaya Watson was on that ridiculous role of just scoring 30 a game. And they had their moments there to close that out. NC State was number 3 in the country at that time. They had their moment there, just couldn't finish out there as well. Syracuse got a little bit away from them as well. At the same time, that was when Syracuse, I don't think a lot of people were looking at them at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think it's
number 2 in the conference though.
Yeah, I mean they've blown up. I think it's Diaja Frazier, one of their
Fairs.
Yeah, she is currently, I think she's in the top 5 right now for all-time NCAA women's points leaders right now. So I mean that's a team that kind of, you know, I won't want to say they came out of the blue, but they're ramping up very up for a good time as well. Their coach, I can't remember what her name is right now, but she used to give me nightmares when she was coaching at Buffalo, and she was coaching at Buffalo, the women's team, and Ball State always had a really good women's team, and we would always play Buffalo, and Buffalo would always beat the crap out of Ball State, and their coach is now the head coach at Syracuse. Nate Oates, at the same time, was the head coach over at Buffalo as well, and would terrorize our men's team. That's when Buffalo was untouchable at the time, and eventually Buffalo ramped up and became really good, pulled off the upset over Arizona in the first round NCAA tournament, and then, you know, both coaches went different ways. Anyway, we're talking about Buffalo right now, but
talking about Buffalo, but
I mean, this Louisville game is a must-win game if this team wants to continue building its resume, and then on the close against Clemson, which in my opinion should be a game that you just go wild, and then go wild in the first half, and then when you build up astoundingly, maybe try to get your bench in a little more, rest your starters as much as you can. Essen could probably talk a little bit more about this as well. This is the time of the year too, knock on wood, that Tanaya Latson ended up getting injured, and Omira Gordon later, right before the NCAA tournament, ended up getting injured as well. That hampered FSU a bit. It led to a big upset loss in the ACC tournament when Latson was out. I mean, how important is it now for them? I mean, in your opinion, what goes into their theory of making sure that their starters are going to be okay for, you know, coming postseason rounds?
I mean, first and foremost, you got to win both games. If you beat Louisville tonight, that puts you ahead of Louisville in a tie with, NC State plays Syracuse tonight. They've lost back-to-back games. NC State has, the Wolfpack has. And Virginia Tech plays in Notre Dame in South Bend. So even if you lose today, yes, in theory, you're still alive for the top 4 and double bye, which we'll talk about for the men's as well in a second. But right now, Virginia Tech is 14-2. They're going to win the ACC regular season. Syracuse is 13-4. They probably had the number 2 spot locked down unless they just choked the last 2 games. NC State, Notre Dame, Louisville, and Florida State are a 4-way tie with UNC and Duke sitting right there at 10-6, right behind them for one game out for fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
Third place, sorry, really. So you're playing for, it's important, the stand for all that. But if you win today, you have the advantage over Louisville, the tiebreaker over them as well.
Mm-hmm.
You already lost the tiebreaker to Notre Dame because you lost them in overtime, but you have right. The tiebreaker over NC State because you beat them.
Mm-hmm.
But all that's moot. If you win tonight and you win out, you're 13-5. Louisville cannot get to 13 wins. Notre Dame plays Virginia Tech and Louisville to close out, so they could easily go 1-1, which all you need to win, finish fourth, and then NC State matters less. But either way, you could get up as high as 3 and get that double bye, which would be huge, because then you get two. Like you would talk about, days off. It's a difference between playing if you get a double bye, you start this tournament Thursday instead of Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big deal because you mentioned, you know, that's a regular schedule and that kind of like, you know, for playing.
Right, absolutely. It's something they've been adjusted to.
Then obviously you have to play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Right, yeah.
But you know.
In the moment, yeah.
In the moment, mm-hmm. But at least you get your regular us going to that Thursday game and then you could ramp up stuff either way.
Mm-hmm.
And getting one over Louisville could be a way of like, you know, they're, I think we mentioned they're a 6-7 seed right now.
Yeah.
Get you up to a 6 seed. And then when you do something in the ACC tournament, you might not have to win it then, you know?
Mm.
Even if you make the finals and lose a close game to Virginia Tech, let's say, throw out there, you know?
Yeah.
Then you could be in the situation and be like, okay, look at our resume, and maybe you could host. I think it's a long shot still. You probably have to win it all and have a good chance.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you get yourself in the conversation. So it starts tonight with Louisville. You got to win that game. It's a must-win game. I'm interested to see one thing quickly pulling up Florida State's schedule this year. Let's see. So last road game, they won 71-63 over Wake Forest. At Pitt, they won 76-60. At Georgia Tech, they won 78-67. So, yes, on the road, they won, it looks like, 1, 2, 3 in a row. Math. 1, 2, yeah. And Miami's on the road as well. So 4 in a row on the road.
Mm-hmm.
But, the you know, before that, they had a 88-46 awful loss to Duke on the road.
Yeah.
That was just a awful performance, hard to watch. And then they had a 79-73 loss to Syracuse on the road. Going back a little further, they beat Clemson on the road 78-72, but they had a double overtime loss to NC State. So sorry, you do not have the tiebreaker over NC State.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they've gone like 4-3 in their last 7 road games or whatever it is. So a road game has not been a gimme. They beat Miami by 6. They beat Wake by 8. Pittsburgh was a convincing 16-point win. Georgia Tech was an 11-point win, but Georgia Tech and Pitt are not good teams as well.
They're not. Know?
So neither is Miami's okay team. So yeah, No, this is a must-win game. You got to have one of your better performances on the road. No letdown. Louisville's a pretty solid team. They're, you know.
So yeah.
It's not going to be an easy win by any stretch of imagination, but that's a game you have to win to help yourself out.
Absolutely.
Get better positioning for the ACC tournament. Because the ACC tournament, the NCAA tournament's important, obviously, but it does not matter until you win the ACC.
Right.
You do well in the ACC. Louisville's coming off a 73-68 loss to Virginia at home.
Really?
Yeah.
Virginia's that team's been so weird this year.
Virginia sits currently
14-13,
6-10 in the ACC, so not great. They lost to Virginia Tech a couple weeks ago. They've lost 2-3 of their last 5 games. If you want to go a little further, 4-6. So it's a team that's kind of reeling right now. This is a team that you got to take advantage of and beat.
Yeah.
I mean, they just lost a home game to Virginia, so that tells you that Florida State should be able to go in there and win if they want. It's an 8 p.m. game. I didn't realize it was that late.
Yeah, it's a late slot for the women's games.
Jesus. It's like, almost like having a 9 o'clock game. Not that anyone has experience doing that. No. So, yeah, that's what's out there for the women. Big game. We'll see what happens. Obviously, tonight, this podcast will be out before the game, obviously.
Yeah.
8 o'clock, so. Anything else on women's? I think we're ready.
No, I think we covered it all.
Well, one more thing, I guess. Jack will have a feature on Michaela Tipson.
I will. Yes. I'm going to read that. She's just a player that does a lot of, you know, I don't want to say the dirty work, but, like, you know, it is kind of the dirty work with the rebounding. And she does score a lot, too. I think she's not as, you know, she's not as flashy as, you know, Tanaya Latson or Amaya Gordon or Sarah Bajetti, but she's the one who has basically owned the paint this year. You know, Florida State is a, you know, they're not the tallest team in the ACC. And, they're just in the ACC, so they really have to, you know, fight for the rebounds. And Timson's been doing a lot of the heavy rebounding work and the scoring work as well. She's one of the double-double leaders in the country, one of the block leaders in the country, too. She it's just a player that, you know, kind of move. She does a lot, but she kind of moves within, you know, kind of the trees and stuff like that. You know, she's very quiet in the way she does it. And that's kind of, you know, the kind of person she is, too. She's, you know, very quiet or reserved, but she does a lot, you know, to really help this team going and stuff like that. And she's talked about a big part of this is through her confidence, too. And, this year it was really about identifying, knowing that she can do it. She is capable of it and letting herself know that in you know, having these double-doubles night after night after night, that she is, you know, more than capable of accomplishing it as well. There are a few more details as well, too, and just kind of was a fun interview to do. She really likes fishing as well. So we talked a little bit about her fishing experience as well and some memorable catches she had, too. But, yeah, it should be a fun story. Yeah, look out for that coming up soon. But, Essen hinted at it a little bit. You know, men's team coming off another late night win. Essen was probably at Tucker till the next day.
No, not there. No,
you know, they're till midnight, or
well, I guess no, the game ended at 11:30, and we were talking for a bit. So yeah, probably left at 12:30.
Okay, yeah. So it was another 9 p.m. game. Fortunately, this one was not as traumatic. You know, as it was with Georgia the last time. It was a Tucker Center 9 p.m. tip off. NC State. They played NC State. FSU came away with the win. Essen, I guess I watched a game on TV, and then I went to bed after. I guess how would you rate the performance? You know, FSU's been very weird lately. The coaching of the men's team and consistency. I guess how would you rate this performance? And just are they starting to find some sort of semblance of a flow? Or I mean, what did this performance look like to you? In talking about, you know, getting consistency back together and just getting ready for critical postseason play and critical end of the schedule play too for regular season.
No, it was a good win. You know, they needed it.
Mm.
You know, it was a much-needed win for them.
Mm.
I'm sorry, I'm also filling out comments. We have our trackers live and going. And
oh, just, stuff in now?
Yeah, I just filled a couple of stuff in for Brayden Fisk. Got a few things in.
Okay.
I haven't seen anything else or anyone else. But, yeah, no. Yeah. Sorry. Just reading update. Fabian Lovett... just so you guys know, will not be testing today. He'll probably or later today, Thursday. Not yeah, but anyways, I'm going back. Yeah, no, it was just a good performance. It was a good team win. They played well. They dominated most of the game. NC State coach, I think, was like, "Yeah, that's not our defense. How we usually play." And the beat reporter was quickly like, "That's how they play all the time. Their defense is not good." But. Another great performance from Jameer Watkins. He had, you know, I think 19 points maybe. I don't remember.
He does a lot. Dude does a lot. Dude does everything.
But it was a nice balanced scoring attack, which is, I think, something that me and Jack have talked about they have not had all year. It was a nice balanced scoring attack where it was not just one person that was dependent on. They had a good attack. I'm going to pull up the stat broadcast stats right now quickly. But I believe... Yeah, so Jameer Watkins had 19 points and an 8-11 shooting. Just a very solid game. Cam Corhin had 11. Primo Spears had 14 off the bench. Chandler Jackson had 9. Darren Green Jr., Bob Miller, and Jalen Worley all had 8. And Deontay Green had 7 more. Jalen Gainey had a dunk, which was our lead photo for the game. Josh Nickelberg had 2 points, and Taylor Bowen had 2 points. So everyone that played had... scored 90 points. I think I had in the story FSU is 6-1 this year when they go score 90 points or more. It was the first time they scored 90 points since they lost, ironically, to Louisville on the road when they gave up, lost 101-92. It was the second time, it was the first time they had 90 points in a win since December 19th. Really? So it's been a while since they scored 90 points. But one thing that my takeaway is, like, they didn't put as a takeaway, but they only shot 14 three-pointers, which is great. They're not a good three-point shooting team. We've seen that all year.
Mm-mm.
Not a good three-point shooting team. They hit 5 of them, 35%, 36%. Not bad.
Mm-hmm.
But they were not forcing up threes all game, which is very nice to see.
Yeah, yeah. It is nice to see it. They're also not a great team in defending the three either.
No. And with NC State shot 10 of 21 from three, 48%. But NC State was like, you know, Florida State, we're not going to defend you, so go ahead and do whatever you want to do. So...
That's not our that's not their defense, Essen.
No. I think the last couple of times Florida State's done pretty well, it's when they've been taking less threes and just getting inside.
Yeah.
And shooting well. They shot 67% on two-pointers.
They shot 61%?
67%.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So, it's a really good game, you know. Overall, they played well. They made plays when they needed to. I think they had 12 points off turnovers. Second chance points, they had 12. Bench points, they tied 36 all of both sides. Points they paid, they had 46 of 36. They won fast break points, they had 18 points. They won that 18 to 19. They had 5 blocks, 7 steals, and assisted on 16 of the 37 buckets. So overall, really solid performance. It was one of their better performances of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Big win they needed. You know, talk about the ACC, it's been not a good conference this year in basketball, you know, I think.
It is not. That is very true.
UNC is 14-3. It's a team that could win. They could either win it all or go down in day one.
Right.
Duke is, pretty good. Virginia is pretty good. Mm-hmm. Then you have, those are top three. UNC at 14-3, Duke at 13-4, Virginia at 12-6. Then you have that little cluster, I don't want to say the word, but cluster.
Cluster mess.
Cluster mess, yes. Clemson and Wake Forest are tied for number 4 at 10-7 right now.
Right.
Syracuse is a half game back at 10-8. Pitt, NC State, and Florida State are tied for 7th at 9-8. One game back. So Florida State is alive for the and it's going to be a long shot because they probably lost most of these tiebreakers.
Yeah.
But they are alive for the number 4 seed. They have 3 games left. All winnable games, too.
Right.
At Georgia Tech, they should win that game Saturday at noon.
Oh, yeah.
At Pittsburgh's their hardest game. That's one of the direct competitors for that 4 seed. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh's 9-8 this year in conference play. They could win that game. It's a 9 p.m. game on Tuesday.
Mm.
Luckily, don't have to stay for a press conference
after. The face you made when that's just 9 p.m. Is that your trigger word now?
Yes. That'll be after I cover a baseball game.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I mean, it's a, I think, 6 o'clock game that day, but still.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about covering the game, I guess, itself.
That's true. Watch it. It's a mess in itself.
And then they close out next Saturday against Miami at home. So, I'm not going to play the scenarios. We're too far away. But, you know what happens? We could probably do that next week on our podcast when we have one game left.
Right.
But Florida State still has a top four seed.
There's still room for chaos.
Yeah. There's still room for chaos, which they need top four because they need to double bye. They need to get to the tournament and probably win it to get in because I don't see any other way of getting an NCAA tournament.
Right.
At 15-13 and 9-8, just...
And it's weird to say, but like I would say, and this is, again, very strange to say, but they're considering how strange... the ACC has been this year. It would be crazy, but it wouldn't be that crazy if FSU managed to pull off some sort of run and win the whole thing. However, I don't think that's likely. At the same time, the ACC's just been very ridiculous this year. In my opinion, it's going to be Duke or North Carolina. Wake Forest could come out of Wake Forest could come up and really make things really interesting. And then I'm trying to think of who else is good right now. Pitt's been playing pretty well recently. I know Clemson has been decent. I don't know. Like Essen said, I think the only situation they could get in is probably winning out.
Yeah,
that double bye is important.
Yeah, no, going back to the net rankings, they went 2-7 in quad one right now, which is great. Wins over Wake Forest and Colorado, you're gonna lose more games in quad one than you're gonna win.
Generally. Oh, yeah.
It's hard to win. For example, UNC is 7-4 in quad one games, so they're not perfect either. Obviously far cry, but Florida State's also UNC, so
yeah, that's true.
But
meant to be hard, like you said.
Yeah, they're meant to be hard and they're gonna be challenging. Most teams are gonna have losing records in quad one unless you're UNC.
Mm.
Who's been a blue blood forever. Yeah. 6-3 in quad two games, you could live with that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But when you get to quad three, is they're 3-3, a loss at home to Georgia, a loss at home to Lipscomb, and a loss on the road to Louisville, who I mentioned. Not just a loss, you gave up 101 points in that game.
Big South team, yeah.
Yeah.
Ohio Valley team.
But yeah, and then, they have two quad three games that must win games against Georgia Tech on the road. And that tells you how bad Georgia Tech is, their quad three game on the road. And Miami's a quad three game at home. Pittsburgh's a quad one game. So, yeah, you need that one. Even if they went out, they would finish. They would be 16. They'd be 18-13 with a mediocre conference record. And they need to go win a tournament to get in. If you win out, I guess NIT is alive again at 18 wins.
Right. It's so hard because it's – I don't know. This has just been a team that, hasn't won games they're supposed
Jekyll
to
be out Hyde. Of. Jekyll and Hyde.
That's a great way to phrase it. I mean, earlier this year, everyone thought things were really changing when they beat Colorado, and that kind of turned out to be, is Colorado still decent right now? Or, either way, for Florida State, it looked like it was a little bit of a fluke. It just turned out to be fool's gold a little bit as well. And then, I think the biggest surprise for their schedule is that the USF loss doesn't look as bad anymore, considering how good USF has been playing lately.
That could have been a really bad loss.
Yeah. And it could have been awful for them. Yeah, but
Colorado was number 9-10. They are probably a tournament team. Their net ranking is 29. They're 19-9 this year. For them, that Florida State win goes as a quad two win. Or quad two loss, so
kind of hurts them a little bit.
Yeah. Colorado's 1-5 in quad one, 7-4 in quad two, then a perfect 11-0 in quad three and four, which is, again, the tournament resume is
what you need to do.
You have to win your quad three and four games and then, you know, just decent. Like, I'm going to bring it up again. I know it's not popular to bring up this team over here, but I need to go back to Florida. It's like, you know, where they've handled the transfer portal pretty well and done pretty well over there. Think they are, let's pull up, 3-7 in quad one games, 3-1 in quad two games, and their quad two is a borderline quad one with the loss to Ole Miss. Ole Miss was 75, be a quad one win. So, but they're 14-0 in quad three and four. Really, if you look at 14-0, 17-1 in quad two, three, and four games. So they've taken care of business and then won a few big games in quad one.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it needs to be handled. And at Florida State, they were a little better earlier in the year in anything.
Yeah, and it's just there's wins too. There's games too that they really should have been in it. Like they had a chance the entire time against North Carolina, and then you get to the final 2 minutes of the game, and you can't even make a layup. Like there's been situations in this season so far where they've had chances to win out, and they just continuously failed to do it. Like. It's granted it's a better year than it was last year. However, anything probably would have been better than last year.
Baseball's the same threshold right now as well.
You know? Yeah, baseball's a little up in the air right now. Like you said, anything's better than last year. Still trying to determine what better means right now. But it's gonna be interesting either way about, you know, what goes on with this team and heading into the final stretch of things coming up. But
it's kind of like you get hit by lightning on a Thursday and be like, hopefully Friday's better. you step on poop, but
you're not getting struck by lightning.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, you know.
That's an unbelievable analogy.
That's why people come to this podcast with these unbelievable analogies,
But yeah, I mean, we'll wrap it up here with a few more sports going on. Beach volleyball's getting started here.
We're all sports. So beach volleyball, I think, hosted the beach bash this weekend, was it?
Mm.
They play number 16, Georgia State, number 16, Georgia. That's literally number next to it. Okay, but number 17, Stetson, and number 19, Tampa. You see what I'm looking at?
Yeah, I got you.
FSU's ranked number 4, so could be interesting to see what they do. They play at 9 a.m., 11:30 a.m., and 2 p.m. Saturday, and 10:45 Sunday. Enjoy, guys.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Just going through some of the emails we get from SIDs.
Yes, always thankful for the SIDs who get us involved.
FSU plays a conference road game this week. Or later this week in tennis, for men's tennis, and just a lot going on. There's the busy part of the year, swimming. There's a little bit of everything. So FSU's busy. Obviously, we cover the main sports, that just how it works, the industry of, you know, we cover sports that people are reading about.
Mm-hmm.
If someone, and we'll put this out there, if someone brings us a good story and anything, we would love to go cover it.
Yeah, we're always open to ideas. Absolutely.
Give a shout out to Ellie Scope. She was named ACC Player of the Week for women's tennis. So, there we go. Jack, where can they find us on socials?
Yeah, of course. You can find all of our stuff at Noel Sports. Basically everywhere. NoelSports.com. Noel Sports on Facebook. Noel Sports on Twitter /X. It's TLH Noel Sports on Instagram. It's Noel Sports TD or TD Noel Sports, I believe, on YouTube. Just type in Noel Sports. It'll pop up. That is where we're posting post-game interviews and just about any sort of video elements that we can get going on there as well. Our personal handles, mine is Jack G. Williams on Twitter's. SN is SN_Kasem. All of our stuff is also where our newspaper is the Tallahassee Democrat. So you can subscribe to the Tallahassee Democrat and not miss out on any of our coverage as well. Definitely worth the subscription, if I do say so myself. But I think that's all we got. Like this podcast, subscribe to the podcast as well, anywhere that you can get listen to as well. We always appreciate the support. But yeah, I think that's all that we got for today. Again, I'm Jack Williams, SN Kasem, and thank you for joining us for another episode.
next week, tune in to see if we do have a 6 a.m. tour of duty.
Yes.
And to see how Jack is, notoriously not a morning person.
Yeah, we'll see how chipper I am next week. Anyway, thank you guys.